One of the royal huntsmen spied us from a far hilltop and hailed us heartily. "We have been searching for you at the king's command," he told us, as he hurried down to join us. "Was the king saved?" I asked. "He is safe in the palace on Elephantine Island, and he has commanded that the Lady Lostris be brought to him directly she is found." As we set foot on the palace jetty, Aiton was there, puffing out his painted cheeks with relief and fussing over my mistress. "They have found the bodies of 23 unfortunates who perished in the storm," he told us with ghoulish relish. "All were certain that you would be found dead also. However, I prayed at the Temple of Happy for your safe return." He looked pleased with himself, and I was annoyed that he tried to claim the credit for her survival for himself. He allowed us only time enough to wash hastily and anoint our dry skin with perfumed oil before he whisked us away to the audience with the king. Pharaoh was truly moved to have my mistress return to him. I am sure he had come to love her as much as any of the others, and not merely for the promise of immortality that he saw in her. A tear tangled in his eyelash and smeared the paint on his cheek as she knelt before him. "I thought you were lost," he told her, and would have embraced her had etiquette permitted it. "Instead, I find you prettier and livelier than ever." Which was true, for love had gilded her with its special magic. "Taita saved me," she told Pharaoh. "He guided me to a shelter and protected me through all those terrible days. Without him I would have perished, like those other poor souls." "Is this true, Taita?" Pharaoh demanded of me directly, and I assumed my modest expression and murmured, "I am but a humble instrument of the gods." He smiled at me, for I knew he had become fond of me also. "You have rendered us many services, O humble instrument, but this is the most valuable of them all. Approach," he commanded, and I knelt before him. Aiton stood beside him, holding a small cedarwood box. He lifted the lid and proffered it to the king. From the case, Pharaoh lifted out a gold chain. It was of the purest unalloyed gold and bore the marks of the royal jewellers to attest its weight of 20 deben. The king held the chain over my head and in tone, "I bestow upon you the gold of praise." He lowered it onto my shoulders, and the oppressive weight was a delight to me. This decoration was the highest mark of royal favour, usually reserved for generals and ambassadors, or for high officials such as Lord Intef. I doubted that ever in the history of this very Egypt had the gold chain been placed around the neck of a lowly slave. That was not the end of the gifts and awards that were to be bestowed upon me, for my mistress was not to be outdone. That evening, while I was attending her bath, she suddenly dismissed her slaves, and standing naked before me, she told me, "You may help me to dress, Taita." She allowed me this privilege when she was especially well pleased with me. She knew just how much I enjoyed having her to myself in these intimate circumstances. Her loveliness was covered only by the glossy tresses of her sable hair. It seemed that those days she had spent with Thanos had filled her with a new quality of beauty. It emanated from deep within her. A lamp placed inside an alabaster jar will shine through the translucent sides. In the same way, the Lady Lostris seemed to glow. I never dreamed that such a poor vessel as this body of mine could contain such joy. She stroked her own flanks as she said it, and looked down at herself, inviting me to do the same. "All that you promised me came to pass while I was with Thanos. Pharaoh has bestowed the gold of praise upon you. It is fitting that I also show my appreciation to you. I want you to share my happiness in some way." "Serving you is all the reward I could wish for." "Help me to dress," she ordered, and lifted her hands above her head. Her breasts changed shape as she moved. Over the year I had watched them grow from tiny immature figs into these round, creamy pomegranates, more beautiful than jewels or marble sculptures. I held the diaphanous nightdress over her, and then let it float down over her body. It covered her, but did not obscure her loveliness, in the same way that the morning mist decks the waters of the Nile in the dawn. "I have commanded a banquet, and sent invitations to the royal ladies." "Very well, my lady, I shall see to it." "Oh, no, no, Taita. The banquet is in your honour. You will sit beside me as my guest." This was as shocking as any of the wild schemes she had thought up recently. "It is not fitting, mistress. You will offend against custom." "I am the wife of Pharaoh. I set the customs. During the banquet I will have a gift for you, and I will present it to you in the sight of all." "Will you tell me what this gift is?" I asked with some trepidation. I was never sure of what mischief she would dream up next. "Certainly I will tell you what it is," she smiled mysteriously. "It is a secret. That is what it is." Even though I was the guest of honour, I could not leave the arrangements for the banquet to cooks and giggling slave girls. After all, the reputation of my mistress as a hostess was at stake. I was at the market before dawn to procure the finest, freshest produce from the fields and the river. I promised Aiton that he would be invited, and he opened the king's wine cellar and let me make my selection. I hired and rehearsed the best musicians and acrobats in the city. I sent out the slaves to gather hyacinth and lily and lotus from the banks of the river to augment the masses of blooms that already decorated our garden. I had the weavers plait tiny arcs of reeds on which I floated coloured glass lamps and set them adrift on the ponds of our water garden. I set out leather cushions and garlands of flowers for each guest, and jars of perfumed oil to cool them in the sultry night and drive away the mosquitoes. At nightfall the royal ladies began to arrive in all their frippery and high fashion. Some of them had even shaved their heads and replaced their natural hair with elaborate wigs woven from the hair which the wives of the poor were forced to sell in order to feed their brats. This was a fashion I abhorred, and I vowed to do all in my power to prevent my mistress from succumbing to such folly. Her lustrous tresses were amongst my chief delights, but when it comes to fashion, even the most sensible woman is not to be trusted. When, at the insistence of my mistress, I seated myself on the cushion beside her, rather than taking my usual position behind her, I could see that many of our guests were scandalized by such indecorous behaviour, and they whispered to each other behind their fans. I was just as uncomfortable as they were, and to cover my embarrassment I signalled the slaves to keep the wine cups filled, the musicians to play, and the dancers to dance. The wine was robust, the music rousing, and the dancers were all male. They gave ample proof of their gender, for I had ordered them to perform in a state of nature. The ladies were so enchanted by this display that they soon forgot their decent outrage and did justice to the wine. I had no doubt that many of the male dancers would not leave the harem before dawn. Some of the royal ladies had voracious appetites, and many had not been visited by the king in years. In this convivial atmosphere my mistress rose to her feet and called for the attention of her guests. Then she commended me to them in terms so extravagant that even I blushed. She went on to relate amusing and touching episodes from the lifetime we had spent together. The wine seemed to have softened the attitude of the women towards me, and they laughed and applauded. A few of them even wept a little with wine and sentiment. At last my mistress commanded me to kneel before her, and as I did so there was a murmur of comment. I had chosen to wear a simple kilt of the finest linen, and the slave girls had dressed my hair in the fashion that best suited me. Apart from the gold of praise around my throat, I wore no other ornament. In the midst of such ostentation my simple style was striking. With regular swimming and exercise I had kept the athletic body which had first attracted Lord Intef to me. In those years I was in my prime. I heard one of the senior wives murmur to her neighbour, "What a pity he's lost his jewels. He'd make such a diverting toy." This evening I could ignore the words that in other circumstances would have caused me intense pain. My mistress was looking very pleased with herself. She had succeeded in keeping me ignorant of the nature of her gift. Usually she was not so adroit as to be able to outwit me. She looked down on my bowed head and spoke slowly and clearly, wringing the utmost enjoyment from the moment. "Taita the slave, for all the years of my life you have been a shield over me. You have been my mentor and my tutor. You have taught me to read and to write. You have made clear to me the mysteries of the stars and the arcane arts. You have taught me to sing and to dance. You have shown me how to find happiness and contentment in many things. I am grateful." The royal ladies were once more beginning to become restive. They had never before heard a slave praised in such effusive terms. On the day of the Khamsin you did me a service that I must reward. Pharaoh has bestowed the gold of praise upon you. I have my own gift for you. From under her robe she took a roll of papyrus, secured with a coloured thread. You knelt before me as a slave. Now rise to your feet as a free man. She held up the papyrus. This is your deed of manumission, prepared by the scribes of the court. From this day forward, you are a free man. I lifted my head for the first time and stared at her in disbelief. She pressed the roll of papyrus into my numbed fingers and smiled down at me fondly. You did not expect this, did you? You are so surprised that you have no words for me. Say something to me, Taita. Tell me how grateful you are for this boon. Every word she spoke wounded me like a poisoned dart. My tongue was a rock in my mouth as I contemplated a life without her. As a freedman, I would be excluded from her presence forever. I would never again prepare her food nor attend her bath. I would never spread the covers over her as she prepared for sleep, nor would I rouse her in the dawn and be at her side when first she opened those lovely dark green eyes to each new day. I would never again sing with her, or hold her cup, or help her to dress, and have the pleasure of gazing upon all her loveliness. I was stricken, and I stared at her hopelessly, as one whose life had reached its end. "Be happy, Taita," she ordered me. "Be happy in this new freedom I give you." "I will never be happy again," I blurted. "You have cast me off. How can I ever be happy again?" Her smile faded away, and she stared at me in perturbation. "I offer you the most precious gift that it is in my power to give you. I offer you your freedom." I shook my head. "You inflict the most dire punishment upon me. You are driving me away from you. I will never know happiness again." "It is not a punishment, Taita. It was meant as a reward. Please, don't you understand?" "The only reward I desire is to remain at your side for the rest of my life." I felt the tears welling up from deep inside me, and I tried to hold them back. "Please, mistress, I beg of you, don't send me away from you. If you have any feeling towards me, allow me to stay with you." "Do not weep," she commanded, "for if you do, then I will weep with you in front of all my guests." I truly believe that she had not until that moment contemplated the consequences of this misplaced piece of generosity that she had dreamed up. The tears broke over my lids and streamed down my cheeks. "Stop it! That is not what I wanted." Her own tears kept mine good company. "I only thought to honour you as the king has honoured you." I held up the roll of papyrus. "Please let me tear this piece of foolery to shreds. Take me back into your service. Give me leave to stand behind you where I belong." "Stop it, Taita. You are breaking my heart." Loudly she snuffled up her tears, but I was merciless. "The only gift I want from you is the right to serve you for all the days of my life. Please, mistress, rescind this deed. Give me your permission to tear it." She nodded vigorously, blubbering as she used to do when she was a little girl who had fallen and grazed her knees. I ripped the sheet of papyrus once and then again. Not satisfied with this destruction, I held the fragments to the lamp flame and let them burn to crispy black curls. "Promise me that you will never try to drive me away again. Swear that you will never again try to thrust my freedom upon me." She nodded through her tears, but I would not accept that. "Say it," I insisted. "Say it aloud for all to hear. I promise to keep you as my slave, never to sell you nor to set you free," she whispered huskily through the tears, and then a beam of mischief shone out of those tragic dark green eyes. "Unless, of course, you annoy me inordinately, then I will summon the law scribes immediately." She put out a hand to lift me to my feet. "Get up, you silly man, and attend to your duties. I swear my cup is empty." I resumed my proper position behind her and refilled the cup. The tipsy company thought it all a bit of fun that we had arranged for their amusement, and they clapped and whistled and threw flower petals at us to show their appreciation. I could see that most of them were relieved that we had not truly flouted decorum, and that a slave was still a slave. My mistress lifted the wine cup to her lips, but before she drank, she smiled at me over the rim. Though her eyes were still wet with tears, that smile lifted my spirits and restored my happiness. I felt as close to her then as ever I had in all the years.